it took me 3 years to get it on paper. I started out by attending a memoir writing class at the Scoville Memorial Library, taught by Carol Asher. And after I did that 1 year, I didn't care for that kind of a class. The other students didn't interest me. So I took private lessons with Carol for about a year. And then I kept writing these little chapters. I had made notes in a Mead composition black and white book from my school days. And whenever I was in an airport waiting between planes or in a hotel room in Paris or London, I would keep making notes.
So the motivation to do it, though, was not only the how you did it, but why you did it. And is it posterity? What is it that makes you want to get it out?
I thought I had experienced some interesting stories, events, and I wanted to describe them principally to my daughters and my family, but also to other lawyers who I had practiced with and who didn't know that I had done a lot of that work, a lot of international law, and I think that motivated me a lot. I also had some help at the end when I wanted to get it published. Self-publishing is the way to go today.
Let me stop you there. Why do you say that? Why do you say it's the way to go? Because, you know, people who have publishers often do better than people who self-publish in terms of getting it out. So why do you say it's the way to go?
That's true, because it's so hard to get an agent and so hard to get traditionally published. And I think that, from what I've seen, that's caused self-publishing to grow. And Amazon is the outfit I used. And my neighbor, Rick Knight, helped me do that because he's a computer expert.
One of the things that I loved about the book were basically, as you say, the vignettes of times. Tell us the story, if you would, about your brief experience with criminal law.
Oh, well, when I was practicing with a small law firm, the partner who had enticed me to join the firm from the Department of Justice gave my name to three other judges who were looking for lawyers to try criminal cases. And in those days, there was no list of lawyers who were interested in doing that. You just had to pick out individual lawyers. So I got my first case, and I settled that right away because I was told by a former assistant district attorney in my office that if you were willing to take some kind of a penalty, a short sentence, if the crime wasn't too terrible, well, you could settle the case. And I settled the first two, and the third one was the one that really drove me nuts. The defendant was not out on bail. He was locked up. He was about 6'3", black guy, huge, Mr. Baggett. And I started representing him, and I worked hard at it. The first incident was I wanted to make a bail application, and I asked him whether he had any prior convictions. And he said, no, not a one, Mr. Layton. Well, when I came up before the judge and made that application, the assistant U.S. attorney says, well, he doesn't have any convictions under the name Baggett, but there's two under the name Slaggett and a third under the name Raggett. And I just about passed out. And when the case was over, we had a trial that went on late into the night because the jury was almost deadlocked. And finally, the judge gave an Allen charge and the jury convicted. And then the time came for sentencing, and the judge asked me if I had anything to say, and I started making my long-prepared speech. He said, no, 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 just tell me, is this the case where the jury had a lot of trouble and convicted at midnight? I said, yes. He says, okay, 6 months. And then I brought him downstairs, and I said, Baggett, I'll file a notice of appeal tomorrow. We'll get this thing reversed. And he says, you don't do nothing of that sort, man. He says, I can do 6 months standing on my head. And he had lifted me up by my necktie and put me down on the floor. And I just stumbled out of the courthouse and said, that's the end of my criminal justice career.
Well, another story that I really liked was where you were making an argument as a young lawyer, and the contending counsel, the opposite counsel, kept saying objection, and the judge kept upholding the objection. Finally, the judge took pity on you and called you up alone to his bench and said something to you. Do you remember that story?
Oh, yes. Well, what he said to me was, is this your first trial? I said, yes. He says, you're doing terribly. He said, have you got a pencil? Yes. He said, take this down. and he told me exactly what to say in order to get the evidence in. I copied it down, went back to my seat, and asked the next question. And my opponent jumped up and objected.
Again.
And the judge said, overruled. And all of the testimony came in from my client, Lucius Smith. And the case was over. And we broke for lunch. And the little guy called him Lower Broadway.
Why did you call it Lower Broadway? I heard that. Lower Broadway is sort of...
That's where his office was.
But it was somewhat demeaning also, right?
That's why I didn't like him much.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, go ahead. So
he then raced over to me, and he said, we can settle this right away. We want to settle right now, so there's no press today and no publicity. And they offered $75,000, and I grabbed it. And the client gave up dinner that night and made a speech, and he said, a toast to my lawyer, Bob Layton, the best lawyer in the city of New York. And you saw how, for a while, both lawyers were coming up to the judge, and then he would only listen to my lawyer. He had no idea why I was called up.
Bob Layton, how important to winning or losing are judges?
Critical. What you've got to do is make a very favorable impression on the judge, assure him over the years that you know what you're doing, that you're experienced, and then you build up confidence with him. I later had many cases before Judge Nunez, who I tried that first case with, and he got to like me, and I won every case after that.
But in the case of when you were an immature lawyer, the judge actually took pity on you and said, here, write this down, kid, and say what I say.
So, a very decent man.
So he cares.
He cared.
And mentored you right there on the spot.
Right on the spot.
Bob Layton, the book is Going on My Own, 21st Century Legal Tales, a memoir of life as an international lawyer. You've had to do with some pretty highfalutin folks like Carol Channing. Can you tell us that story?
I was doing some work for a client of ours in Chicago, which conducted the Nielsen television ratings. And someone was tampering with their list of 1,400 listeners who had little boxes on their television sets. And they got paid, I think, $5 a week for having that device on their box. And I went and took the deposition of the fellow who I located on East 33rd Street and got out of him the name of the person who was mailing out these interfering notices from somewhere. I wanted to know where or who was doing it, and I took his deposition and got the name of a fellow named Rex Sparger, who was out in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So I then journeyed out to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and through a local counsel, I got his name, and I went to his bank, and I located Chief Teller, and sweet-talked her a little with the help of my local counsel, and got not only the checks, but I found out who was getting the checks, who they were written to by Sparger. And it turned out to be the husband of Carol Channing.
And what were they doing? They were trying to create the impression that more people were watching or listening than were?
Well, she had an upcoming first-time television program. She had never been on television before. And they wanted to make sure that it would be successful. So by increasing the news watchers, that helped them get a large turnout for her television program.
And how was it resolved, Bob?
Well, I wanted to sue them, but my partner said, no, the Nielsen people aren't interested in any more publicity. You did a great job. Get on a plane, come back home, and that's the end of it.
And it was resolved in the Nielsen people's favor because the interference ceased.
It ceased, and that's all they wanted, and they wanted an end of publicity. So if I had started a lawsuit, they would have more publicity. They didn't want it, and I think they were right.
In the end, this memoir writing of yours, and the book is very interesting, Going on My Own, 21st Century Legal Tales, a Memoir of Life as an International Lawyer by Robert Layton. Let me tell you, I enjoyed it, and I hope that others will read it and maybe do what you did. And I thank you for sharing it with us. Good luck to you.
Well, thank you very much, Alan. I've enjoyed talking to you very much.